5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
We're ready for some football, baby.
It's a football Friday with the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
And the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
From the SportsMap Radio Studios, here's David Gal
and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket.
Welcome in the boss and the gloss here on SportsMap Radio. And Carla, we're still enjoying this wonderful time of year when there's so many sports going on. And we're going to cover the landscape today, including the NBA, which we have not done much. Ooh. There's a big problem going on with the Nets, and we'll get to that. Trade deadline in the NFL was this week. A lot of trades went down, really intriguing trades, and trades that sort of indicated where teams are headed, such as the Dolphins.
A lot of aggressive trades. I mean, a record 10 trades yesterday, and there were still a few that had happened, you know, in the week before, but that was an exciting day yesterday.
And the first time the CFP rankings have come out, we get a peek into how they're feeling about the teams at this point. Tennessee, number one. Did that surprise you?
That did not surprise me. And I feel that was very deserved. And I think, you know, there's going to be issues. Like, how did TCU undefeated have a one-loss Alabama in front of them? But, you know, this is the first ranking, as you mentioned. And I think these things work itself out as the season moves along. There's still a lot coming, and we've got big Tennessee-Georgia matchup this weekend coming up, which will be a good one at Georgia. So I think, you know, TCU probably feels some disrespect. We'll get to all that later, but it does end up working itself out, I believe.
Yes, TCU will get its shot. Obviously, if it runs the table and it's the Big 12 champion, then they're going to find their way into the Final Four. But that's to be seen. There's a lot of ground to cover. We shall see how that unfolds. We've got a lot of ground to cover with some great guests coming up on the show. We're going to talk to Randy Mueller, former GM of the Dolphins. He's now with The Athletic. We're going to talk to George Atkinson, a former Raider. I see you blushing every time I mention his name.
I'm excited. Bring on George. Strong safety, Super Bowl champ, great guy, 11 years in the NFL. Love him.
And we'll talk to a man you danced with once in Atlanta, Hudson Mason, former quarterback from Georgia, now a college football analyst with ESPN. We'll have him on later in the show. And then one of our favorites, Alex Gold. He was a show host here at SportsMap Radio Network. He's now in Kansas City.
Solid
Gold. We'll talk to him about the Chiefs, the state of the Chiefs, and the trade that they made at the deadline to bolster their wide receiver room. Lots coming up. It should be an exciting show. When we come back, we will take a look at the Miami Dolphins and Geno Smith, the miracle that is Geno Smith with the Seattle Seahawks. We'll look at these topics when we return. That'll be up next year on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the SportsMap Radio Network.
From the SportsMap Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. And when we went to break, we were noting that Tua is undefeated as a starter for the Dolphins. Now, he has had injuries that have taken him off the field, very notable injuries, but he was back last week. He played a great game, and the Dolphins then went out at the trade deadline and picked up Bradley Chubb. It seems they're all in. And clearly, there's a lot of talent on that roster. Are you buying into what the Dolphins are offering now?
Not yet. Because they played a 1-6 Detroit team, or it was 1-5 at the time, and they won by 4 points.
Yep.
So that gives me a little bit. And, you know, it is, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt in a slow start against a team that has won one game is fair. But I think that Tua is looking so good because Miami has done a great job putting the pieces around him, bringing in an offensive-minded coach in Mike McDaniel, bringing in Tyreek Hill. I mean, my gosh, the combo of Hill and Jalen Waddle is over the top.
You bet.
But without one of them, including Tua, what do they look like? Because here's my concern. My concern is twofold, and you tell me otherwise, David, is that your best ability is availability. And Tua, from college to the pros, has not shown me that he is constantly available, especially when they need him to be. Secondly, they play in Miami. The weather is great. There is no snow. There's really hardly any rain. So when you get down to it, what does it look like if you have to go to Green Bay or if you've got to go somewhere that's cold and the weather conditions are
well,
not
in
Miami.
His case, it may be on the
and
road.
And played in Alabama.
In Kansas City in January in a playoff game or in Buffalo in a playoff game. It'll be intriguing to see how that projects.
I mean, what are your thoughts on the Dolphins? I'd love to hear where you come
well,
out
of
this.
Well, I feel clearly Tua, the one question has always been his health. But coming into the season, there was a bigger question, which is, even if healthy, can Tua play at a really high-quality level?
Agreed.
And one thing I do think he's answered pretty well is, when healthy, he can play at a high level. With all those weapons, to be sure. But I think he's shown us something this year that moves the needle on him versus where we thought he was coming in.
Okay.
And look, things can change during the course of a long season. Defenses can make adjustments. And to be sure, the Dolphins have an RPO game that fits Tua very, very well. And actually, coming into the season, some people thought, well, an offense that explosive with Tyreek Hill wanting to go deep, it doesn't work, this RPO, because the RPO's got lots of short passes. But they're hitting Waddle and Hill on quick slants and letting the speed, the run after catch, is really exciting for that team. Tua does have a knack for getting rid of the ball quickly. And so I'm optimistic about where they can go. With the huge caveat, nobody needs to say to me, well, but if he's not healthy, he's no good. That's right. He's not. But if he's healthy, I'm starting to believe. And I feel much better about him than I did coming into the season.
Well, I like to hear that. You know, I think that Tua can help himself stay healthy. I mean, some injuries you can't help.
Right.
But, you know, he in his first game back after the two concussions within a four-day, five-day period, he had the ball and he was running with it. He didn't even slide.
Yep.
He went head first into two defenders. And I thought,
he of
okay,
all people going head first. How does he do that?
That is called, you know, fuzziness from concussion, not realizing don't lead with your head.
Right.
You know, and the other thing that holds me back a little bit with Tua, I mean, I love your enthusiasm and I would love to see that pan out because I think he seems like a great kid. He is height disadvantaged. You know, it's the same situation with Baker Mayfield. It's like we saw flashes of Baker Mayfield being able to do some really great things. But when push came to shove, especially in the two-minute drill and inside the red zone for Mayfield, you are limited when you cannot see over linemen that are a lot bigger than you. So I do worry a little bit about that with Tua. I think the difference between what Tua had and Baker had with their height situation, he's got Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, serious dual threat.
Yeah, Tua's not that physically impressive in terms of both height just his physical heft.
And his ability to move.
So we'll see how that projects. There may be defenses that contain him better, that control that RPO, and so we'll see the development there. Very intriguing. At the one other quarterback I really want to highlight that has really stood out to me, this one of the biggest surprises this season has been Geno Smith. I mean,
oh my gosh,
who saw this coming? Maybe Pete Carroll did. I'll give him some credit for willing to put his season in the hands of Geno Smith. But this guy has exceeded everyone's expectations. And look, he's been around the league forever. It seems like he's played for all teams, bouncing around. There just aren't a lot of guys who have had that kind of career where they were off in oblivion and then suddenly came in and played very, very well. And Geno Smith is this year's miracle.
It's a great story. I love a good feel-good story because I'm sure as a Seattle fan, you were nervous when Russell Wilson leaves. I mean, he was your guy for how many years? But you know, this is, you had this in our show notes. He's the most accurate quarterback in football, the third highest rated quarterback. He's in the top five in MVP consideration right now. And I mean, look at the record. He's got the Seahawks at 5-3.
Yes.
Oh my
Hard
gosh.
To believe.
They're
and
sitting alone in the
They've got a good running game
NFC
around
West.
Him, and they use him the right way. He throws a beautiful deep ball. We'll see if it can hold up. But thus far, you know, we were talking about, it's hard to come up with quarterbacks who have played this well sort of late in their career after bouncing around for a while. And the only names we could come up with were Rich Gannon. You remember Gannon?
Oh, yeah, I do. I'm a Raider girl.
And finally did well with the Raiders. And then, of course, if you go back even further, another one, another Raider, actually, Jim Plunkett. Mm-hmm. He was a guy, though, different from Geno, because Geno, of course, was never projected to be that great. Plunkett came in much heralded and bounced around a few teams, did not
Heisman
play
winner.
Well.
Yep.
And then he got to the Raiders and all things clicked and he went to great heights and won a Super Bowl. But I will love to know what the ceiling will be on Geno Smith. I guess that will unfold during the course of the year. I think at best he's an above average quarterback and the Seahawks maybe squeak into the playoffs. But that would be a tremendous season for Geno Smith.
Well, absolutely. And you know what? Credit his persistence and his perseverance, because in these 10 years as a backup in second, third, whatever string he was, that guy was quietly watching film, learning from the starting quarterbacks on all the teams that he's been to. And he was ready for this moment. When he got this moment, he was ready for it. And in a way, for Seattle, it's been addition by subtraction, because off goes Russell Wilson, who, I mean, like you said in the open, who would think that this would be Geno Smith taking them to first place in the NFC West? But look what Taylor Lockett said after the Seahawks win on Sunday. Wide receiver Taylor Lockett says, "It's amazing what we can accomplish when nobody cares who gets the credit."
Oops.
Ouch.
A little backhanded slap toward Russell Wilson, I presume.
And this kind of adds up to what we've been hearing from Marshawn Lynch, Richard Sherman. They had a podcast together and talked about the situation with Russell Wilson. I mean, Russell was really losing his locker room, and I think it was a situation, we've talked about it many times on this show, where when things were going right in Seattle, and they were for a long time, not this last year, though, you know, Russell Wilson, it's all Russell, Russell, Russell. When things were going wrong, the Legion of Boom was screwing it up. And you know what? That does not bode well for a locker room. And I think they have a sigh of relief. They have popped that balloon in the locker room, and now nobody cares who gets the credit. It's a team game. And I'm sad to say, I don't think that was a situation with Wilson under center.
Okay, one more quarterback topic here. Trevor Lawrence continues to struggle. And of course, he came in as a very heralded quarterback. I might even say that whole draft class of quarterbacks has struggled, because you look at the big three they took there. There was Lawrence, and then Zach Wilson of the Jets struggled last week. Trey Lance is not on the field. Later on, Mac Jones got drafted, Justin Fields. But there's been nobody who's really stood out. Now, they're all in year two. It's still early. And Trevor Lawrence is almost in year one, because, of course, he had to deal with Urban Meyer last year. But are we at a point where there's starting to be real red flags about the fate of Trevor Lawrence?
I think so. And I don't want to think so, because I was a huge fan of his at Clemson. I love what he's about. I was so excited for the Jaguars to get him. And I have a lot of faith in Doug Peterson as a first year coach and head coach for the Jaguars, first year in Jacksonville. He was a former quarterback. He knows how to develop quarterbacks. So I maybe will give a little more time, because this is early. We're halfway through the season of his first year, and there was basically not only a lost year, but probably a year where Trevor Lawrence went backwards. I'll tell you what concerns me just a little bit, and this may be Trevor's personality. He seems very non-urgent. There's not a sense of urgency that I see with him on the field, with his body language or on the sidelines. He's throwing a lot of picks, which, you know what? That happens when you're a rookie quarterback. But do you remember the Sports Illustrated interview that was done before Trevor Lawrence, knowing he was going to be the number one pick in the draft and everyone else knew too? They had an interview with him, and he said, "Yeah, I mean, I love football, but it's not my life." And that was a all across the United States.
The first chink in the armor,
like,
because at that
what?
Point, he was the next Peyton Manning, the next John Elway, the next great anointed quarterback, a once-in-a-generation guy. And then people did start to worry that maybe he wasn't focused enough on football.
And I stuck up for him. I said, come on. I mean, this kid is smart. He knows there's more to it. But I'm just wondering, with how I see his body language now, how I don't see a big improvement even with a coach who knows what he's doing, maybe there is something to this. You know, I mean, I do as best as I can. I don't know.
Long hair don't care.
Long hair don't care. What are your thoughts, David? You're very sad.
Well, it's a little early to write him off, but right. There are certainly some concerns. He threw two egregious picks last week, picks that should not happen, and picks where, given his, though, yes, I'll give him that He is in his only in his second year, and the first year with, was with Urban Meyer. But he was a multi-year starter, I guess a three-year starter at Clemson.
Yes.
So he had lots of repetitions in college. I recognize that's not the same as the NFL, but he's not like some of these other quarterbacks, not like Trey Lance, who barely played in college and then was being thrust into starts in the NFL. Trevor comes with many, many more repetitions at an elite level, an elite program against elite competition back in college.
Yes. I mean, he won a national championship against Alabama. That is the closest thing to an NFL defense you're ever going to see. And pretty much it is an NFL defense. So I agree. Jury, I mean, it's early. There's still time to pick it back up and turn this thing around. But I saw in person, I was at the Jacksonville Texans game in Jacksonville, and I saw him throw an interception in the end zone. It's just, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, Bill Parcells used to tell his quarterbacks, once you get in the red zone, the one thing you never, ever, ever, ever do is throw an interception because you cost us 3 points right there. And Trevor's done it too many times. He's at the spot where he really needs to grow out of that and show us another level.
And look at the teams we're talking to that they lost to, the Texans and Denver. These are not formidable defenses.
All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears. We're going to look at what is going on with the Nets. Steve Nash is out.
Ooh.
And there is continued chaos with the New Jersey Nets. That up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on Sports Map Radio. And when I look at the New Jersey Nets, what I see, maybe in historic fashion, is the historic coupling of great talent and dysfunctionality. That intersection of talent and dysfunctionality, I've never seen coupled quite so pronounced as this team. Because you cannot dismiss the extraordinary talent they have, headlined by, of course, Kevin Durant. And look, Kyrie Irving, when he's on, can be exceptional. But the dysfunctionality on that team is historic. Steve Nash is now out. They're bringing in the former Boston Celtics coach, Ume Udoka. And look, he's got his hands full because Nash was never really given a chance to succeed. That whole organization really set him up for failure.
No, you set that up beautifully, David, because you're right. Nash was never given any chance to succeed. And this is a mutual parting of ways, for sure.
Steve Nash is probably relieved to be out of that mess.
I've got to believe that he is. And do I think he was the right guy to be the coach in the first place? No, I don't. You don't take a first-year coach who has never been a head coach, and he was an outstanding player with a work ethic second to none. You put him in a room with Kyrie Irving, a number one, biggest distraction, can't get through a season for anything, and Kevin Durant.
And Kyrie Irving, who said, we don't really need a coach. Don't worry, I'm here. Kevin's here. We got this. We don't need a coach. That's what he said at the beginning.
Yes.
Just preposterous, but keep going.
But that is the exact point that is right, David. It's like the minute he was announced as the head coach, that was Kyrie's reaction, was Kevin and I don't need a coach, so I don't really have much to say about him because we don't really need him. Well, you know, you look at the great organizations. If we're just staying in the NBA, you look at, well, what was the Lakers? You look at the Boston Celtics. You look at the Golden State Warriors. You look at Milwaukee. There is structure in place. There is a hierarchy. There is a structure of how things are done. You even look at the San Antonio Spurs, who are winning without a whole lot of names, but they have a great structure in place. The Brooklyn Nets organization is a disaster. There is no structure in place whatsoever. The culture's toxic because there's no structure. Kyrie, we can start with we don't need a coach, to I'm not getting vaxxed, to now we're posting after Yee's whole situation with anti-Semitic remarks and things. What does Kyrie do when they're 1-5, they're not even winning, goes and posts to Twitter an anti-Semitic movie and book? I mean, we're completely tone deaf. But not only that, the issue I have with it, Kyrie can continue doing things like this because there are no consequences. Like, for example, after this disastrous anti-Semitic situation that Kyrie did and got into it with the Beat reporter who does Nick. Oh, what's Nick's last name? Friedel. He got into it and would not concede. He just kept going that don't call me an anti, don't dehumanize me. Kyrie, what did you just do? But to Jewish people everywhere, and you know, courtside, here they are, you know, Jewish people sitting there with their T-shirts against Kyrie. What does Sean Marks, GM of the Nets, say? You know, nope, Kyrie's not going to be available to the media. Let's throw Steve Nash out there because we're going to fire him tomorrow. So let's throw him out there. Steve Nash has to toe some crazy party line. And then this is what Sean Marks says. Why Kyrie wasn't available to the media? Well, we don't want to cause more fuss. Okay. And then we're going to let Kyrie simmer down. How about there's consequences for Kyrie? And how about you don't play him? Don't keep him away from the media and put Steve Nash out there as your little pawn. Make him accountable. Because what the thing is with Kyrie, which we have seen on his exit from Cleveland, you know, on his the world is flat, on his no vaccine, it's Kyrie's answer to all of that is you all don't get it. You all don't understand. You all don't know because he is arrogant and he is not humble. He's right. The rest of us don't get it.
Maybe you just don't understand, Carla.
There we go. There we go. I'm relieved for Steve Nash. I am sure he is glad to be out of there. And I think this, your mention of the lead hiring of Ime Udoka, it's putting calamity on top of calamity. Good luck to you, Nash.
Well, they are bringing a coach. I mean, Udoka was exceptional with the Celtics last year, but there's a reason he got fired from the Celtics. It was abusive language to a female. So now you've got somebody who's anti-Semitic, and now you've got somebody who is abusive towards women at the Celtics organization. It does not feel like they've figured out a way to be highly functional.
No, it's so true. In Brooklyn, fans, it's sad. You can't be surprised about your first round exits in the playoff at all. When you allow this kind of culture to infiltrate and to keep on going, this is what's going to happen. And I think, you know, it's very frustrating because as far as talent, and don't forget, they gave up the farm to bring in James Harden, and James Harden wasn't going anywhere. Well, guess who went somewhere? James Harden. So really, the players are absolutely running what's going on in Brooklyn. And you've got, how badly does Steve Nash want to come back and coach when your star player in Kevin Durant goes to the owner, Joe Tsai, and says, it's me or Nash and Marks are gone. We couldn't trade you, so everybody's back. There was no way that Steve Nash was going to be able to do this. I don't know why they kept him 7 games into the season. They're still a disaster. They lost, you know, right the day that Steve Nash got let go. It is such a mess in Brooklyn, and it's so sad because they've got talent. They've got a fan base. But you've got to know any team that takes on Kyrie Irving and allows him to have free reign, a little kid with no fences around him, good luck to you. I don't care how much talent you have, the toxicity is going to get you.
Do you have a sliver of hope for Ben Simmons?
I don't. I don't because something has happened to Ben Simmons because he is a really talented defender. Like, he really can distribute. He's a distributor and a defender, and he's really great at both of those. He got, I don't know where he got snake bit, whether it was in Philadelphia or here, but the guy will not shoot a basket. And so, you know, we saw him not playing for over a year because of a back injury. Back injuries are serious, and they are real. I mean, we're a couple games in, and now he's out with a knee injury. I don't know. I mean, I would never question anyone's injuries at all, but something is psychologically, he needs a sports psychologist. He doesn't look the same. He looks afraid to shoot. Do you see any hope for him?
No, it's a long road back. The shooting is a strange dynamic, yet clearly nobody ever thought of him as a great elite shooter when he came into the NBA.
Right.
And the 76ers were never able to really develop the shot for him. But you would love for him to play to his strengths and to be that great defender and distributor that he did demonstrate he could be, but there's been something off. Obviously, the injuries have been a real issue for him. But they need, that team needs some sort of stable, day-in and day-out performer and leader of the team. It's funny, Kevin Durant, wildly talented, but he doesn't strike me as a leader in the locker room, a guy who's going to galvanize everybody and unite everybody and create focus in the organization. He's just sort of this wonderful, great piece that if things were functional, he could be fantastic and take them to great heights. But in the midst of that dysfunctionality, he doesn't seem to be able to wrestle that to the ground and fix it and create a leadership environment that's going to really work.
Well, and that is exactly why Golden State was the perfect fit for Kevin Durant, because all he had to focus on was basketball. They didn't have drama. And on top of that, they had a very, very clear structure in place. And those superstars didn't mind yielding to Durant to do what he needed to do. He didn't have that in OKC. Look what happened. And he doesn't have it in Brooklyn. And look what's happening.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Randy Mueller of The Athletic, and we will ask him all things NFL, particularly the state of the Dolphins and their big pickup at the trade deadline. That up next here on the Sports.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Joining us now on the Sports Map Radio Network is Randy Mueller of The Athletic. He's the co-host of the GM podcast. You can find it at The Athletic. Randy, thank you so much for joining us. You're on with David and Carla.
My pleasure. Good to be back with you guys.
Well, great to get your insights on all things NFL. And let's begin with the activity at the trade deadline.
10 trades yesterday, record.
A big number of trades went down. Very intriguing. What stood out to you the most?
Well, I think the aggressiveness of some of the teams stood out. I think it's awesome. I like to see that. You know, they moved the trade deadline back 2 weeks, about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago, from after the sixth regular season game to after the eighth regular season week. And that opens the window for so many more things. You have a much better idea about your own team. Injuries play a bigger part, so you're able to go out and make deals, I think, with teams that are willing to give to get. And I think that's really what's opened up a whole new facet for NFL teams to be able to make the volume of moves they did. But we saw quality moves made as well.
So one of your former teams, Randy, you were the former GM of the Dolphins. They made a big move. I think they are sending a we-are-ready-now move in obtaining Bradley Chubb from Denver to Miami for a first rounder. Do you think the Dolphins can go all the way, and can they do it with Tua? Do you trust him as their franchise guy? What do they look like after yesterday?
Well, Carla, that sounds like a loaded question. I don't know. let me just say this. I like the aggressiveness. Chris Greer, their GM, I've known him forever. He actually worked for me when I was there. They are going all in. I think they are willing to give into next year's cap and next year's draft choices to get good this year. I like the Chubb get. He's going to be a nickel rusher that really fits well for them. And he's coming with 5.5 sacks that he got in Denver, in a defense in Denver, Carla, that he really didn't fit for. Denver runs a 3-4 scheme. Chubb is really a defensive end in a 4-man front. He'll find, I think, a better fit in Miami. And I like the addition. They also got a running back from San Francisco, Jeffrey Wilson, who's been very productive. Mike McDaniels knows him well. So I think they ended up with a little bit of a sleeper get in some depth at running back, but obviously the crown jewel in Bradley Chubb. So I think they've done the best job of kind of preparing for the second half of the season and giving themselves a chance to get in the conversation, at least with Kansas City and Buffalo. And, you know, beyond that, it's anybody's guess in the AFC. So I think the Dolphins pushed themselves to the front. Now let's see if they can keep Tua healthy. And that's why I say the loaded question, because Tua has to be healthy. We see what he can do if they can keep him upright. That's always the critical component that I've always doubted with Tua. Is he's a small guy. He does have certain things that he does better than others. And I think from the pocket all the time, it's always an issue for me, is can he stay healthy? So time will tell.
We're talking to former Dolphins GM Randy Mueller. Great to get your insight on the Dolphins. One of the things is you mentioned Bradley Chubb. What I love about him is he's still a young guy. Assuming they sign him to an extension, he can be a foundational piece for a long time for that Dolphins team. Another guy in a similar situation, of course, is Roquan Smith, traded from the Bears to the Ravens. He, too, they'll have to extend with a contract, but he can be a foundational piece for that Ravens. And the Ravens needed help on defense. So how do you think Roquan fits in on that defensive team?
Well, I think it's a great get for them. I think the Ravens needed a little bit of juice inside, a guy that can run, a guy that can make plays from sideline to sideline. Roquan gives them that. I think the big downside of, if there is a downside, is that they're going to probably have to pay him $20 million a year to extend him. There are a lot of teams in the NFL who are not willing to pay an inside linebacker that kind of money. There are very few that will. But the Ravens are the Ravens, and they play defense a different way in a different style. So I understand how it makes sense for them. The good thing about a guy like Roquan is that he is intangibly a leader, a guy that's going to be a voice of reason in your locker room. He's going to help you in all those ways. And I think he does that probably without saying a word. He comes in and he's a leader on their defense right now. And I think Baltimore needed that. Baltimore's defense has slipped this year. It hasn't been what it's been in the past. So a move like this, kind of a shot in the arm for their defense, I don't know how they're going to figure out a way to pay all these guys, but at least they have a short-term fix right now for getting the Ravens back to playing Raven defense.
Yeah, that Ravens defense had surprisingly given up some big leads late, and so they needed to shore it up, and Roquan certainly a great talent. Now, the Vikings, 6-1. And Carla in our show notes was writing, it's still hard for her to think of the Vikings as elite. They've got an elite record, at least. But they went out and got themselves a great tight end.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I'm with you, Carla. I forget that Minnesota's 6-1, to be honest with you. They've kind of quietly won some games that, you know, none of us really took notice of. I think the peculiar thing about their trade yesterday is that it's within the division. They get T.J. Hockenson from Detroit, who is obviously Detroit's best tight end. Mm-hmm. And Detroit made the deal without any qualms about having to play against this guy twice a year from now on. So that doesn't happen very often where you see trades within the same division. I think Minnesota needs an option for Kirk Cousins. I think it's always better, or Kurt is always better, when he can dump the ball down, and a tight end is usually a security blanket for a skill set like Kirk Cousins. So I think that will benefit both he and Hockenson, and for that matter, the Minnesota offense as a whole. So I like the move. I think Detroit's looking for a little different style. You know, Dan Campbell was a tight end in the NFL for years. He wants that bang him, run-blocking, tough physical knee-biter, and I think he'll be able to use that now because he's going to have a couple picks to find one.
Yeah, and Randy, staying in the NFC, I'm not going to ask you a loaded question this time, just very simply, your GM hat, why was Green Bay null at the deadline?
Yeah, that's a hard one for me, Carla, and I understand their philosophy and what's made Green Bay Green Bay. They don't spend in free agency. They don't make aggressive moves. They draft and develop. But I just think in this case, they may have lost an opportunity. And my problem with what they've done is, as a GM, the only criticism I would really fear was that coming from the locker room. And so I don't know how Brian Gutekunst goes in that locker room now and says, hey, I did everything I could. Sorry we couldn't make it. I just couldn't do that. I would have had to make a deal or two just to try to send the message to that locker room that we're trying to do something to get better. We understand we drafted some young receivers. That may be good in years to come.
Sure.
But I think another receiver or two now of the veteran nature could have appeased a lot of people. And again, the biggest critics, and really the only critics I care about, are what's in that locker room. And they missed a chance to do that. So I don't know that a Brandon Cooks would have made a giant difference, but the message itself can tend to carry a lot of weight, probably as much sometimes as the ability of the player you acquire. So that message was missed, or the opportunity missed, and I'm afraid it might cost Green Bay down the road.
I agree with you, Randy, because you look at the disconnect of what you've talked about. Like, they did draft well with these young receivers, but as you talked about, development takes time. And then at the other end, the ball distributor is making $50 million a year and on the sunset of his career. So is he going to be patient enough to watch the development of this? And clearly in the postgame pressers, and Rodgers has no problem talking this way. I mean, he's very frustrated with their lack of level of play at this point, which isn't fair to a rookie. And I can understand where Rodgers is coming from. But yes, I think Green Bay sent a message that we're not doing everything we can for this locker room. I agree with you.
Yeah.
We're talking
Brian has done things a certain way. He has only been with Green Bay. He only knows that. And I think in this case, sometimes when you don't have a single owner over your shoulder on most days, you tend to get a little passive in the way you do your work. I think in this case, not having an owner who pushes the front office, who pushes the coaching staff, who pushes players, hurt them in this instance. They needed to be pushed, and they just never really felt any urgency to have to make a deal.
Great point.
We're talking to Randy Mueller. You can hear him on the GM podcast. He's with The Athletic. So, Randy, one thing, we're sitting here in Houston. We thought Brandon Cooks would be traded at the deadline, maybe to the Packers, maybe to the Buccaneers. I mean, there were teams, there were rumors of the Cowboys or the Rams. They all could use receivers. Yet Brandon Cooks is a Texan today. You may have seen Mike Florio's reporting that maybe Cooks will try to negotiate his way out and get a release, much like OBJ did with the Browns a year ago. What do you think the fate of Brandon Cooks is, and why is he still a Texan?
Well, I think obviously the easy answer is the $18 million he has guaranteed next year, and nobody wanted to take that bite of the apple, or at least that big of a bite. So I think there's value in Brandon Cooks, as the Texans have found, but there's also some reason that a particular player continues to get traded, and he's been traded several times. So that means, four or five teams wanted him, but that means four or five teams were willing to move him. So I think the elements that he brings are obviously speed and some explosive plays, some downfield throws, some of those things, and we're all looking for that. But there seems to be a disconnect at some point that allows teams to move on from him. And I think in this case, the contract kept him where he's at. I really don't see the White Texans would let him go for nothing. So I don't know that a negotiated buyout is really in the cards. I guess you could at some point, but I think that sets precedent in itself that if you're a player, you can get out of there if you squawk. So I can't see Nick Cesario acquiescing to that kind of an exit plan myself.
Yeah, no, that would potentially have long-term ramifications. Certainly could be an issue. Okay, love to ask you, right now it looks like there's the big three in the NFL, the Bills, the Chiefs, and the Eagles. Who are 4 and 5 in your mind? Who stands out as a chance to break into the big three?
Well, I think out on the left coast, you're going to have to look at San Francisco now if Christian McCaffrey is what we're used to seeing. Now, if he's hurt and he's not playing, I don't think you can count San Francisco in that mix. But if Christian McCaffrey can do what he did last week.
Holy moly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot, because only three people have done it in the history of the league. But what Kyle Shanahan has shown is he's willing to adjust his scheme and the way he game plans to fit individual players. We've seen it with Debo Samuel now for a couple of years. We're going to see it with Christian McCaffrey. I think the 49ers are a team you have to consider as being in that elite group if he's healthy. I think we know what they do on defense, so it's a complete team. Obviously, they're held a little back by the quarterback, but if they can get Jimmy G to not turn it over, they'll be fine. And then in the AFC, I think the other team you've got to throw in there, and we talked about them, is Miami. I just think Miami, if Tua is healthy, stands a chance to get into that top three or four in the AFC, and I think you'd have to add those two teams right now.
It doesn't look like the Rams are the same team as last year. What's missing there? Why are they taking such a fall?
Yeah, they're a shell of themselves.
Yeah, they definitely are, and I think it's a lot of style. I think, for my money, and this is just me, I think Sean McVay's got away from his identity. He's gotten away from a physical running game of any kind. They've become really passive and really predictable. They want to throw the ball as much as they can, and some of that can be blamed on running backs that aren't there anymore, but they've had a chance to rectify that and haven't either. So I never thought I'd say it, but I just think they go to a fight now with a knife, and everybody else has tanks. And so they just aren't ready for that. Other than throw the ball to Cooper Kupp, that's really what they're limited to. So defensively, they can't carry him like they have in the past. They're trying to, but I think from a philosophical standpoint, they've got to run the ball and somehow gain that physicality that tends to rear its ugly head every time they play the 49ers, because the 49ers are just the opposite and built just the opposite.
Well, no kidding. And the 49ers just own the Rams. And, you know, it was very, you know, the way that they've handled Cam Akers, you know, putting him out in the trade block. And now they're saying, oh, just kidding. We want you back. Yep. I mean, it's just like, wait, what are you doing? Like, well, and is there anything to this, Randy, that Matt Stafford is really the Matt Stafford that we knew in Detroit, where he is a serviceable quarterback and he can have moments of flash, but is he really the guy that can make you a dynasty?
Well, I think he can make you much better than where they were with Goff, and we saw that when surrounded with the weapons they had a year ago, that he could do just that. But those weapons have been stripped away. I think that the Emperor's new clothes have been exposed when nobody else is around. So I think at some point, Matt Stafford has to get some help, and they haven't got that help in the running game. They don't have the perimeter players that they had a year ago. So I just don't, I don't know how that changes. I know Sean McVay puts it all on himself to game plan and be a, the smartest guy in the room. I just think they've whittled away at everything he's had there. They've had a lot of coaching staff changes.
Yeah.
They've had some personnel changes. So I just don't know that it's there right now for the Rams to recapture it for a stretch run.
You heard it from Randy Mueller. Randy, really appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. It was great to have Randy Mueller, a former GM of an NFL franchise, the Dolphins, on the air. And one of the things that struck me that he said was his trouble if he were the GM of the Packers here by not making a move, and the Packers did not make a move at the trade deadline, that he would have a hard time answering the locker room. The symbol that it sends, the signal that it sends to the locker room is, we're not going to double down on this team. And he thinks that would be tough. I think that's particularly tough with the Packers because you've got this guy, Aaron Rodgers, who's going to call him out. We're going to hear from Aaron Rodgers this week.
He does call them out.
And Aaron Rodgers is going to be very animated and frustrated that the Packers did not make a move at the deadline.
Yes, I agree. And I thought it was a great perspective that Randy brings that as a GM, if he was Brian Gutekunst, the one thing that he would be concerned about and the only thing, how is my locker room taking this?
Yep.
And I love that perspective. I think we get away with that from the world of trade demands, the world of building super teams, obviously much more in the NBA than in the NFL because of the size of the roster. But how about really taking that into consideration? Those are the guys that you're in the trenches with. That is who matters.
So Packers, without the move and perhaps frustration in the locker room, the other end of the spectrum, of course, he's very excited about what Christian McCaffrey can do for the 49ers. It was interesting that he thinks the 49ers might be that fourth team in the NFL as this year we're looking for who's number four behind the big three of the Eagles and the Chiefs and the Bills. So the 49ers certainly put that stake in the ground. And then he sees the Dolphins as perhaps a team that could ascend. And why not? They might be the Bengals of this year. It's a big leap. I mean, there just aren't a team like the Bengals every year. So to say, oh, this is going to be the Bengals of this year is a stretch. But really great to have Randy and a great first hour. Great to have him up.